Two Faces Radio.
One of the programs which you hear daily on many of these mutual stations begins like this.
Uh-huh, you thought me was done, huh? We not more.
What's the matter here so fast? What are you standing still or something? Speed! Can't you catch your little chicken? Huh? Come on! Move your tail! You look like a girl out there. What's the matter with you?
You're like a Kentucky Fried Idiot. Sick 'em on a chicken.
Sick 'em on a... Well, looks like someone's going to a big party tonight. You should pick up a chicken strip party pack for all your friends. Here's a coupon.
Whoa, look, pal, I don't take coupons from giant chickens. Not after last time. Oh, yeah, and that nice chicken outside gave me this coupon.
I'm sorry, this has expired.
You son of a...
Smart boy, got a mind like a steel trap, full of mice.
What are you?
God, you're not too bright. I'm a chicken lady.
A chicken lady?
Yeah, and I love life. Do you love life?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you might, because I put that in my personal Latin. Chicken lady loves life.
Announcing the portable Sunday dinner by Colonel Sanders. He cooks up Kentucky Fried Chicken in his kitchen, then packs it up in his handy bucket. All you do is pick it up.
Arise.
Arise.
Arise, chicken.
Arise, chicken.
Arise.
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 Arise. Chicken.
Arise, chicken.
So, can we stop holding hands in fairyland here?
Now, after 50 years in Hollywood, I have finally produced what I feel is the finest motion picture ever made. I have called it the Kentucky Fried Movie.
Now, another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
Time for Radio Labyrinth with Tim Andrews, Ira Malkin, Steph Swain, and Jeff Leboff.
Oh, hi, welcome to the Radio Labyrinth podcast. My name is Tim Andrews, and I'm joined this week by Jeff Leboff.
Howdy.
Hello, Jeff.
Howdy.
Howdy, howdy. You gotta pod that down or we'll get in trouble. It's Terrapin Station by the Grateful Dead from the album Terrapin Station. Stephanie will be joining us shortly. But, I gotta tell you this, we have a guest this week joining us. Is a local chef who has been dedicated to bringing Atlanta quality dining and making eating an experience. He's known nationally for appearing on season 12 of Bravo's Top Chef. And through his Twitter handle, The Angry Chef, he's now running the kitchen at Sandy Springs' very own Southern Bistro, Ron Eister. Welcome to Radio Labyrinth.
Thank you, Tim. Good to see you.
You
Thanks
too.
For having me.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Been a long time. How have you been?
I've been well, man. Been up and down, you know, but you
you
find new paths to journey down and, staying connected to the food world here in Atlanta and doing some new and exciting stuff.
Yeah, you know, I was in food for a little bit.
I know.
Working at a Mazza Pizza over off of...
off of Edgewood, right?
Edgewood,
yeah.
Yeah, that whole thing.
That's good pizza over there.
Exploding the, what do they call that, the oven? Brick oven?
The brick oven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know how hard it is to start that fire in the afternoon? You have to stack the wood and get the paper in there. And
yeah.
Try not to burn your arm off.
Pizza is a pizza looks simple, but it really isn't.
I know.
I learned that lesson when we had Timoni's and, glad we went down that road, but it was painful at times for sure.
When my wife, then girlfriend, and I first moved into Midtown, we were looking for pizza to order. And I do like brick oven pizza, but we started ordering from your place. And I was like, oh, my God, this is so delicious. And then one day the phone was ringing and ringing.
Yeah.
What the hell happened to that place?
Yeah.
But yeah, you've had ups and downs, and now you found yourself. Tell everybody where you are now.
Yeah, well, actually, I was at Southern Bistro. I got there about a year ago when it was still Nancy G's, and she's been over in Sandy Springs for almost 12 years. And
yeah.
Nancy and I worked together at the original Food 101 in Sandy Springs a long time ago.
I used to go there quite a bit.
Yeah, and so, you know, when I kind of fell apart a little over a year ago, she called me up and wanted me to come over there. And honestly, I was kind of apprehensive because I think I was ready to move away from the whole traditional restaurant setting. But I went over there and helped her rebrand the restaurant into Southern Bistro. And I'm still over there in somewhat of a part-time capacity. But I just started venturing kind of into an event consulting brand called I Dig Food.
Okay.
And, so
I got fake news then.
Not fake news. It's you know,
outdated
not news. The most current news.
Okay.
But, what I really want to focus on is bringing curated events to Atlanta and beyond. You know, we've got this Mother Clucker Fried Chicken Festival coming up in a couple of weeks. That this is an event that I used to do over at Rosebud, and so we're going to be doing a larger version of it over at the Stave Room at the American Spirit Whiskey Distillery.
Mm-hmm.
And I've partnered up with Springer Mountain Chicken, that's a longtime partner that I've had. So, you know, I feel like the festival is almost becoming the new restaurant, you know, especially for this millennial demographic. That
they love that.
Yeah, the attention span can be a little bit shorter, so bringing them kind of a compressed version of a very dynamic experience, you know, in a short window seems pretty optimal. So, you know, to me, I feel like it gives me the opportunity to do what I love the best instead of, you know, I'm very grateful for what I was able to do in the restaurant industry, but, you know, like I said, the days of, you know, the 14-hour days and the doubles and the weekends and the holidays, you know, I feel like I've graduated from that, so.
Yeah, I mean, that has to get tiring.
Yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, through everything that I went through, you know, I got sober, I got divorced, I mean, I went through it all. Like, I checked everything off that bucket list in, like, 6 months, and, you know, I'm just ready to kind of find balance in new ways, but I want to stay connected to food. I love food, and I love music, you know, so this pairing kind of gives me an opportunity to showcase all of that. And, you know, and again, I think it's something that the Atlanta dining scene will embrace because it's something a lot of people who do these events, they're not restaurant people.
Right.
You know, so you get to some of these events and some of them are great, but some of them are a disaster. Because some of the people who are handling logistics, they don't have the common sense food and restaurant knowledge that you really need to kind of, you know, get the festival running right. I think because people are so, our public is so savvy with dining, when they go to a festival that's obviously driven, you know, by food, I think certain people are expecting certain amenities that they would get in a restaurant.
Right.
And that's kind of what I want to bring to the table, you know, no pun intended, you know, bring all that restaurant experience to a festival setting to where people are really having an overtop experience, but it's obviously a very rustic and casual environment, and it's just a lot of fun, you know?
Hey, Ron, I want you to meet Stephanie.
Hey!
How are you?
Great. So nice to meet you.
Likewise.
She likes food.
Steph and I are both big Top Chef fans.
Yes, so I remember you from season 12.
Super excited when you did
it. It was fun. It was surreal, to say the least.
I watch every season.
Yeah.
I was wondering, too, like, I know, like, you cut your teeth in Charleston this last season. Were you like, oh, man, I wish I was on that season because it was in Charleston?
Yeah, you know, I definitely had mixed feelings about it. You know, I mean, Top Chef was a phenomenal experience. I think the relationships that I was able to build, you know, I thought it was really funny that Katsuji was back in.
Yeah, I know, right?
Like, he's kind of like the new edition of Richard Blaze. He's making Top Chef his career.
Yeah,
you know? And,
right.
So,
is it hard to find a concept that works? Obviously, Flip worked.
Yes.
But the hot dog place
did not
work.
Yeah, and I think the hot dog thing was, it was part concept. I also think it was part logistics. The parking on that part of North Island Avenue.
Terrible.
Is terrible.
Yeah.
I still never got that sous vide hot carrot hot dog, which I heard was good.
You know what? A hot dog should be a hot dog. this whole like,
I'm with you.
Yeah, you know, it's a hot dog. It's supposed to really not be good for you. Like this whole, I had a tofu dog.
You know, like, you don't want a celery stick that tastes like a pork rib.
Yeah. You know, if you want a hot dog, eat a hot dog.
I went to the Vortex last week and I said I'll have the big naked weenie, throw some slaw on there. I'm a yellow mustard guy, I don't like the brown mustard, so
yeah.
I mean that's perfect for me, and I don't need it fancy, and I don't need it to be anything else but a hot dog.
Exactly.
So I think you're right there. Well, we are talking about the best You best get clucking. It's the Mother Clucker Fried Chicken Festival. Obviously, I know where you came up with the name.
Yeah.
Tell everybody where it's at, when it is. And
yeah.
Yeah, so it's coming up Sunday, April 30th, which is just in a couple of weeks. We're mm-hmm. going to be featuring 24 local chefs in the area that are going to basically come down and put their best fried chicken foot forward. This was, a concept I conceived back in 2012, mm-hmm. and it was very impromptu, and it was kind of a potluck fried chicken festival that we did in the parking lot at Rosebud, and we did it for a few years, and it was pretty successful. So now I want to do it on a larger scale. We've partnered up with American Spirit Whiskey. They're going to be doing whiskey tastings throughout the festival. We have PBR as a beer sponsor, which, you know, cold PBR goes great with fried chicken.
Sure.
But the whole idea, too, is we're going to have some chefs that are doing kind of more traditional preparations of fried chicken, you know, like maybe digging up their grandmother's recipe for a really classic dredge. But then we're also going to be challenging chefs to do really creative preparations, like stuff that you just wouldn't expect. You know, like one of the first years of Mother Clucker, I did a fried chicken and rice. And I basically took chicken confit, which was slow-cooked chicken, and I mixed it up with Carolina plantation rice and some spring peas, and then I actually breaded it like a croquette and fried it. So,
nice.
You know, so basically it's kind of thinking out of the box. I also did a fried chicken egg roll, which is basically like, I guess if you had to term my cuisine, I guess you would say it like farm to fat boy. You know? So I took this, I took all the ingredients you would have in a classic chicken dinner, whipped potato, collard greens, mac and cheese, and of course chicken, and I rolled it in an egg roll and fried it. And of course, you know,
what's that website you just said you mentioned that you're on?
The website for the festival is motherclucker chickenfest.com.
but I dig food
I dig food's website is not quite up yet.
Okay.
I'm still kind of in the infant stages of getting this brand up and going, so we're kind of debuting the brand with the festival. Mother Clucker has a Facebook page and an Instagram account, so we're gonna have Mara Davis actually emceeing the event.
Awesome. I love
and
Mara.
So yeah, I love Mara as well, and obviously I'd be happy to furnish you guys with some tickets to have you out there that day. And
my god,
check it out. So we're gonna be, you know, this is hopefully gonna be the first of, I'm actually doing a Mother Clucker in Chattanooga at the end of May. So this is something that ultimately Springer Mountain and I have discussed taking throughout the Southeast.
And like you were saying earlier, this is a great idea because not just because millennials, but you get us Gen Xers, we need to be dragged out of our house sometimes.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
We have to be dragged out. And something like this will drag me out. Now, last weekend I went to the Dogwood Festival. I don't go to the Dogwood Festival for the art. I go to look at the people and to see the food trucks and see if there's something I haven't tried yet. So it's an eating thing for me to
Everything we do in this city is there's got to be a food component.
Right.
You know? And that's the thing, too, Tim, as you were saying. Obviously, food and alcohol, somewhat, I don't want to say areas of expertise, but that's what I'm good at.
Yeah.
And as I continue to develop these festivals, I want to definitely incorporate some non-food elements. Like Mother Clucker, we're going to have some vendors there selling food products, but, you know, honey and different pickles and stuff like that. And, you know, what I feel like is the festival can be a platform to bring a greater awareness of what's actually around us. And, you know, giving some of these smaller vendors and businesses a platform to showcase their product. But, you know, I've also been doing some research, and, you know, the millennials are so captivated by anything techie you can incorporate.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of the next area that I want to kind of explore as we do more of these festivals, whether it's, you know, an interactive photo booth or maybe getting some of the guests actually involved in the cooking. I wanted to have like an amateur portion of Mother Clucker, but we're just too tight on time to get it going. But hopefully that'll be in the cards for next year. And food is, it's communal,
right?
You know, and that's what some people lose focus of. And I think that's what, you know, really the festivals give such a great voice to that aspect of food.
Is there going to be like a contest?
There is going to be a contest. And Todd Richards, who he has Richard Southern Fried, and he was Todd's been at a few places, but he was the chef at White Oak Kitchen and Cocktails. And he actually won Mother Clucker when we had it at Rosebud for 2 years in a row. He won a real fancy rubber chicken. Now that we got some sponsorships involved, maybe we're going to up the prize a little bit. But yeah, him and Bob Townsend of the AJC and Angela Hansberger, who does some writing for Creative Loafing, they're going to be judging this year. And I think we're going to put together a People's Choice as well.
So, nice.
You know, like I like the whole competitive aspect, but at the same time, time. It's
also sampling.
Yeah, it's just out there to have a good time. The chefs like getting out of their restaurants and, you know, feed them alcohol throughout the day. And we'll have some good music. I got a, my friend Patrick Webb's band Along for the Ride will be playing. So
what kind of music?
Very Americana.
Good.
You know, he likes the Dead. You know, a lot of these guys, when, you know, my Deadhead friends, I'm like, you can't like do a whole set of Dead.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Okay.
We can't scare. As much as I would love that, we can't, you know, scare people away.
We're gonna do Rain Song.
Yeah, it's gonna be like 3 hours of space.
Everybody, one in every three pieces of chicken has double blotter acid. Enjoy.
I really feel like, you know, like Future, Migos, they're not gonna pop up at this thing.
Yeah, this is the best chicken. Yeah. Bread it. Jeff, do you have another question?
Are there any chefs that you want to mention that you know are going to be participating?
Oh, God. I always hate being put on the spot like this. I'm trying to remember the entire list of chefs.
I saw Better Half was coming.
Zach from Better Half. Oh, you see, you got to pull that up on your computer.
I had wondered if Kevin Gillespie,
you know what?
Revival.
Revival was actually going to be involved in doing sides, and they just had to pull out last minute. So that was kind of unfortunate because we are going to feature some sides. I'm going to have my buddies from High Road Craft there selling ice cream.
They are some delicious.
You can definitely have ice cream. Nick Anderson from Ornsby's is one of the chefs that's going to be there. He's been kind of a rising star in the dining landscape for a few years now. You know, and that's another thing too. Like, what I want to be able to do is, you know, I feel like one thing that I did well over the years when I had Rosebud was develop talent. You know, we had a restaurant where people liked to work, and I want to be able to foster that element with these festivals and give some of these younger chefs, some of the restaurants that maybe are not considered marquee destinations at this point, give them the opportunity to be in the public spotlight and, you know, kind of enjoy some of that energy. I mean, let's face it, some of these rock star chefs, they're just too damn busy. You know, so it's kind of like prepping the next generation of chefs that are going to continue to guide the food scene here in Atlanta.
I like the idea of Mother Clucker being a traveling road show.
Well, yeah. Well, that's exactly what I want I Dig Food to be. You know, again, it's kind of like the idea of the Dead being on tour.
Yeah.
You know, like a traveling circus of food and fun and music. That's kind of where I want to get to.
And I think that that would be embraced. And I think it's a great idea, and I hope it succeeds.
Well, I appreciate that.
And you're going to do another one up in Chattanooga?
Yeah, May 21st, we're bringing it to Chattanooga. And definitely the name Mother Clucker raised a few more eyebrows in there than it did. Like, one of the magazines we're working with, they're like, are we supposed to put that in print? And I'm like, well, that is the name of the festival.
So are you going to do Summer Mother Clucker or Fall Mother Clucker? I'm going to do both. All right.
Wait till you see some of the T-shirt designs.
There. Oh, boy.
Yeah. So,
dead, know, very dead-esque.
Get the cluck out of here.
Oh, okay, and, the puns.
You know, there's another good one. You want a cluck.
What do you think about fried chicken ice cream?
I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah, bring that up. Steph brought that up earlier.
Fried chicken ice cream.
I saw they have, you know, because they have a big fried chicken festival in Japan. And they did that, I think, last year or 2 years ago. They had fried chicken ice cream. And,
is it sweet?
I think it's like sweet and salty.
Okay.
Because I love fried chicken, and I love ice cream.
Now, I could maybe see like a version of an ice cream sundae that maybe had like candied
that's
chicken
what I thought.
Skins.
Yes,
on.
Yes.
That might be pretty good.
That's what I was thinking.
I talked to High Road about doing drumsticks, you know, like the old school, just, you know, ice cream, you know. So obviously it's a play on chicken.
Yeah.
So we'll see what they come up with. They're real creative over there.
So going back in time, I mean, I read your bio. But I don't remember everything verbatim. But how did you get into food? I mean, what brought you into food, and what did you initially want to do before you got into it?
What did I initially want to do? I had some aspirations of possibly being a lawyer, which probably that's what I should have done. You know, I here's the thing. I grew up in New York, and I grew up around great food, but it wasn't right in front of me all the time.
What part of Long Island did you grow up in?
Stony Brook, Center Ridge area.
Okay.
And I have a huge extended Italian family, so the holidays were like just these epic bacchanalias of food. Just incredible. But after the holidays were over, my brother and I – and I love my mother with all my heart. She has done so much for me, but there's one area that she could not excel in, was cooking.
Yeah.
And so my brother and I ate what I like to call an institutional menu for the first 18 years of our life. Like, we had chicken cutlets every single Monday night. We only looked forward to Frank's Pizza on Friday.
Yeah, because it was good, right?
Oh, it was fantastic. And this was back in the day when you could send your kids into a pizzeria and not be afraid they'd get abducted.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mom would be sitting in her big white Oldsmobile that she had, and she would send me and my brother, and then she would yell at us not to eat any Zeeplas.
You know? What are Zeeplas?
Zeepla is basically like sweet pizza dough that they fry. Right. Uh-huh. And they fry it, and then they toss it in powdered sugar.
Yum.
And that was another favorite of Timoney's. Mm. And so anyway, my brother and I were stupid and young, obviously, so we'd go in there and try to conceal eating Zeeplas. But we'd come out to the car like with powdered sugar pasted all over our face. So then we get home, and you know, we could only eat like one slice of pizza,
right,
which my father didn't mind because there was just more for him. Right. Anyway, my father was a plumber. He owned his own business, and I grew up working for him. And I remember my parents were very invested in our education because my parents didn't go to college, and that was a huge priority for them. They sent my brother and I to private school. So one night we were having a conversation, and I told my parents I didn't want to go to college. I wanted to take over my dad's business, and my mom just freaked out and would not. She didn't want me working with my dad again. So this is probably the decision she regrets the most in life. They actually, about a year later, allowed me to get my first restaurant job. And again, being in the food business, like the restaurant world is completely unadulterated. And when you're – I was introduced to it when I was 17 years old. Mm. You know, so
right.
Here I am. And I'll never forget walking into my first professional kitchen. And I was just a busboy then. It was called the Watermill Inn up in New York.
This is like a real restaurant, like fine dining?
It was a semi-upscale. It had an a la carte restaurant, but its main focus was weddings. I mean, it was like a wedding factory. Okay. And so I was a busboy initially, and then I remember walking into the kitchen and just that energy. I mean, it just absolutely captivated me. And I ended up making salads the next summer. And it was like, you know, old school New York, like the 6-inch glass plate,
right,
a little bit of greens, 2 red onions, a cucumber, a cherry tomato, and I probably made like, you know, 3,000 of them every Saturday. Oh. And so, but I had this bug instilled in me. I didn't really realize it fully yet. It was kind of like my affection for the dead. It took a while to kind of perpetuate and develop. And so
you have to let that settle. You can't just go, I'm a deadhead, and get in it. You got to let that.
You have to become a student of it.
It has to happen over a course of a couple of years, and, you know, you're right about that.
Oh, yeah. It has. Yeah, I look back. I look back when I was at some shows earlier, not to diverge too much.
No, please. That's why it's called The Labyrinth.
You know, like,
even though that's wrong.
Like, I could be listening to a show that I have now, like, uh-huh, you know, a soundboard recording, and I was like, oh, my God, I was at the show. Like, and I can't even – I know I didn't truly appreciate the show. Like, I'm on my couch now in love with it, listening to it. And meanwhile, you know, I was probably at the show stoned or drunk, and, you know, not that that's a really bad thing, but I certainly wasn't able to appreciate it
Have. Jeff and I went to our first show – or it might have been my second, I don't remember. I think it might have been our first. It was July 4th,
1989
at Rich Stadium in Buffalo.
Yeah, and that's
that's
on
CD.
DVD. Yeah, it's on DVD.
And you can even watch it on... Yeah.
Opens with Bertha.
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes into cold rain and snow.
And I didn't remember any of it other than Jeff broke his nose. You weren't tripping, were you?
No.
We picked up some hippies hitchhiking there. You know, it's one of those things. You know, you just we're in line because Rich Stadium, which there's one road in, one road out.
I mean,
every Buffalo Bills fan who goes to games knows this, or Deadheads. So we get in there, and it's a hot day, and we got some weed from these guys. And this is years ago, so, you know, it's okay. And, you know, I just like, take some acid, and I'm bundling around. And then we got to the Whippet balloons. And
we didn't know you're not supposed to walk around after doing, you know, nitrous.
And we're both hitting the balloon, passing back and forth. All of a sudden, both of us black out, and I just see Jeff in slow motion.
Timber.
Yes. Nose. Blap. And then I'm walking around tripping with his blood on my hands going, you got any ice? So it wasn't exactly a great show for Jeff. We mostly went to see 10,000 Maniacs right. open up.
Wow.
And
I can't believe you just said that on the air.
Well, we like you said, we really hadn't been gotten into the
matured
dead all that
yet.
Much. But it was a great first experience. Then we ended up seeing a bunch of other times in Buffalo.
We had no idea what the scene was going to be like.
Yeah.
We're just like two, what was it?
We were both.
Just out of high school.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, as cliche as it sounds, I mean, it's so there's nothing like a Grateful Dead show.
Right.
I mean, it's just, there's nothing like it. I mean, it's... Yeah, my first show, you know, again, growing up in like kind of a blue-collar family in New York, you know, like my dad was a plumber and my cousins and uncles were, you know, firemen and cops and electricians, you know, like I had never really seen a man kind of express themselves on an artistic level.
Right.
And then when I saw the Dead, I mean, let's face it, the Dead, they look like a bunch of mechanics too up on stage. You know, like, I mean, like my first concert in New York was at the Westbury Music Fair. I think it might have been Barry Manilow.
Wow.
You know, and so that was a show. Like, the stage was like literally rotating in a circle.
And they were chorus girls.
And yeah, and they were wearing, you know, ensembles.
Right.
Or, you know, like the Dead, I mean, you know, they get up on stage and, I mean, it's just obviously so impromptu and it's so raw and stripped down. It's all about the music. So I'm watching the Dead, and I really didn't know who they were, to be honest with you. And I'm like, man, like any of these guys could be like plumbers like my dad.
Yeah.
You know, like,
right.
And I'll never forget, like, I'm watching Jerry play, and it's like one of those iconic moments where his glasses is getting ready to fall off his face. And it was Birdsong. Oh. And they're in this intense jam, and then they stop on a dime, and they go back into this beautiful harmony. And, you know, again, mm-hmm. a group of men doing mm-hmm. this. Like, so it was such a, you know, I get the chills just talking about it because it was something I had never experienced, you know. And then, so fast forwarding back to our conversation, I was very enthused with the military growing up, and I ended up going to the Citadel in Charleston.
I saw that in your bio. I didn't know if that was a college or
it's
a
college.
Military thing.
Yeah, you want to ask me if I graduated? That's everyone's always like, did you graduate?
Well, you did. It said
I did graduate. Yeah, because I'm, you know, because I'm fat, people don't think I graduated.
Oh no,
yeah,
oh, so.
So, and it's all good, you know. So I did graduate, and when I went there, it was still all male. I mean, it was a really intense experience, and so.
Well, that first female that got accepted,
Shannon Faulkner.
She didn't make it.
No, she did not make
but
it.
But there's been some since.
Now it is. Yeah, it's co-ed now. Yeah. And I have mixed feelings about it, but that's really not important.
Yeah,
But the best part about Charleston was being introduced to the food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the whole low country cuisine. And being, I'm from New York, and I have such an affection for that food, which is one of the reasons I wanted to open Timoni's. But, you know, who I am as a chef really is defined by that food and kind of that approach to food. And, you know, when I cooked in Charleston, this whole kind of farm-to-table ethos that everyone is still, like, crazy about, it was a very well-defined lifestyle by that point. You know, like, I remember I worked at a place called the Starfish Grill, and I thought it was such a pain that we had to butcher our own fish that came in on a charter boat that our right. restaurant owned.
This sucks.
Yeah, like, why can't we get the fish filleted like the other restaurants? You know, like, that was kind of my... That I was, again, back to our point about maturing and truly understanding stuff, that was kind of my initial outlook on food. But Charleston was great for me because it brought food and music and just lifestyle all together.
Well, I think I learned how to work in a setting because I worked at a restaurant and because we did catering and I had to sit there and roll 300 ravioli balls before we put them in the ravioli that we made by hand. You know,
yeah.
what I mean, you have to learn how to use your hands and think and I interrupted you, but go ahead.
No, and understand ingredients and respect food, you know.
Right.
And that's and it's great to see that, you know, I have mixed feelings about this, all these people who are like, you know, oh, my God, it's so great to support local growers. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just thankful that they finally are having the awareness, even though, you know, it's something that it's been near and dear to me for the past 15, close to 20 years now.
Yeah, it's like when I worked at Wendy's, you know, we had all the lettuce in a big trash can and we kept it ice cold.
Yeah. And the beef is never frozen.
Never.
Oh, never.
Never.
When I got let go and, you know, from radio in 2015, and then I found that job, it was because the manager who was in charge of hiring was a fan of the show. So he's like, hey, come down and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, give me a job. And he's like, really? And this is Jamie. He's our friend. He works at Nick and Norman's now in Sonoya. And he invited me in. And the thing that I like doing, I did different things. I was a food runner. I had to do prep cooking in the evening or apps, which I hate. Because it's just, and you forget that when you're younger and that clicker's going off, you learn to hate that thing.
Oh, the printer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then I remembered, here I am 46 years old, and this, bzz, and I'm like, no.
Yeah.
But the thing I did like doing was 2 days a week I got to do prep. So it's making cashew cheese, and, you know, everything's from scratch. And I love that, making fresh pesto from basil and, you know, slicing the pepperoni. That's the stuff I like doing, not interacting with the people who I don't like. And, you know, cleaning off their tables and their messy kids and everything. But getting back into that aspect of food was really, really fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, that fun didn't stay with me. So I ended up working at Mary Todd in Carroll in Cabbage Town off of Carroll Street, which is a barbershop. So there, I still work there part time, even though I'm full time in radio now. So I just like the thing. But
yeah, to be connected to it.
So
yeah.
What rank of chef would that make Tim if he did the apps and the prep stuff?
Would
he
that be would a that sous- officially would be called? No, I don't even no. think it would quite be sous chef level.
No,
it'd be what it's they call prep, it's a fancy start? French word called gourmage.
Gourmage.
Gourmage. Yes. So
well, when I was washing dishes at Urban Pie for two nights, I don't think
they might not have had a title.
It was garbage.
No. Yeah. I was actually, this was last summer. It was hot. I was washing dishes. It was my second day there, and my hands were all soupy, and I just a little tear broke, and I said, I can't do this, and I said thank you to the manager and left.
Yeah, it happens.
Actually, no, I just no-called, no-show.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Ah, that's the cardinal sin.
NCNS.
Oh, well.
Anyway, I derailed you, though.
But he's going back to Nick and Norman's, though. Well, when it was called, what was it, Social Grounds or whatever it was before Nick and Norman's
well,
bought
it? Well, it was that restaurant that Zach Brown owned.
Yeah. Some of the best collard greens I've ever had. And I know you have collard greens.
Yeah.
What is, like, the secret to the best collard greens?
Collard greens, you have to clean them very thoroughly. There's nothing worse than eating collard greens that are gritty because they haven't been cleaned well enough. You got to cook the hell out of them. Mm. But you actually can overcook greens. Because you still want them to have a little bit of bite to them. I use a ton of ham hock, and I actually use Mexican Coca-Cola.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I use a little bit of, it needs some acid, and we used that Rosebud when I first started making these collards. I started making them actually for when we used to do Thanksgiving dinner every year, and we used to pickle our own jalapenos, and I actually, one night we were making them, and I tossed a bunch of the pickling brine from the jalapeno in there, and it gave it like this smoky, acidic edge that was just so good.
Mm.
But yeah, to me, the it's got to have that defined sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the best ones I ever had were made with Dr. Pepper, so I can see using Mexican Coke would be really good too.
Yeah. So,
what is a green?
A green? Well, you know, a lot like Swiss chard, collard green, bok choy. These are all what they call bitter greens. Mizuna.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are lucky enough to. Georgia produces a lot of great collards. Swiss chard is another crop that does really well here. Arugula is technically a bitter green, but it's more of a lettuce. You know, you can eat arugula raw.
Right.
You can eat baby collards raw, you know.
My granny always made mustard greens. That was always my favorite growing up. Yep. But, like, nobody makes mustard greens.
Well, that's because no one likes them anymore.
I love – she killed it. She crushed it when she made them.
And that's what, you know, like,
oh
that's the thing about
so
food. Like, you know, you talk about, like, endangered species when it comes to animals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's food categories that fall into that, you know, and there are, you know, organizations like the Southern Foodways Alliance that's pretty much their sole mission is to preserve Southern tradition and food cultures, you know, and anytime you hear Kevin Gillespie talking, he's always speaking to that point, you know, and there needs to be like, you know, people who learn how to prepare these recipes, you know, it's kind of an act of preservation. You know, that one generation can pass these down to the next. The problem we're having is that, you know, a lot of people don't cook anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so grandma's going to have to pass her recipe down to the people at Blue Apron.
Yeah.
So that, you know, somebody can.
I have a little book at home with every single cookie and cake and pie recipe that my grandmother ever had. And she hand wrote them all.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And mailed them to me. And
you need to hold on to that book.
And I still make, once a year I'll make, she had made this thing called a blueberry torte. It costs about $20 to make, and it weighs like 1,000 pounds, but it's delicious.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, I got to crush these walnuts. Blah, blah, blah. What's poke salad?
Pokey. Is that P-O-K-E?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like
I know there's poke salad in it.
Well, tuna pokey is like chopped up cubed raw tuna normally you would do like sesame oil, maybe some mirin.
Oh, no. I'm talking about the green. You know that song, Poke Salad Annie by Elvis?
No.
Okay.
You get a sound bit here?
I'll find it. You, Stephanie, Jeff?
No, I always took for granted, like, I would come home from high school, and my granny would just have a coconut cream pie.
Yeah, just waiting.
Just in the fridge.
Yeah.
A perfect meringue on her chocolate cream pie.
Yeah.
I mean, she just would do that every day. I mean, just went for whatever. In the morning, you get up, fresh baked biscuits, fried apples for breakfast, bacon, you know, because they canned all their own apples. They canned all that kind of stuff, and it's...
And now the kids have Pop-Tarts and Instagram.
Oh, God. But I cherish it. Exactly. And so anytime somebody says that they had a time machine, I would go back to those meals. That's what I would take a time machine back.
Well, I mean, honestly, like, maybe a perfect world could be if we could marry the level of technology that we have now to how we revered food. You see, like, because we still don't respect food like we should. Mm-hmm. We're in awe of it on certain levels, which is why we pay homage to it with all the Instagram posts and going to restaurants. But to your point earlier, Tim, about taking the time to actually hand make these ingredients and learn about the food, invest yourself in the food, well, that's when we'll be able to preserve that part of the culture. Because otherwise, you know, that Instagram post is just going to get buried in all the other posts that you take moving forward. You know, so
and if you don't know how to make it, then and you're just buying it all the time, you don't know where that comes from. You don't know if your shrimp that you bought at the store is from China, where they don't have any quality control.
Exactly.
You know,
like I mean, going back to my Charleston days. I mean, again, I got a degree in English. You know, when I told my parents I was going to cook, you know, I mean, they pretty much lost their minds. I mean, I went to Charleston and I was a Citadel graduate, and I had friends that were in the military, and I had friends that had taken jobs at engineering firms, and you know, and the Citadel, the one thing I did not like was this whole good old boys network, you know, like in some of these dumbasses that I graduated with, that they went off to Greenville, or we would call Green Vegas, which was like another version of Charleston, and they would take these ridiculous corporate jobs, but they were all doing well financially. And I came back to Charleston, I was trying to finish graduate school, and I was making $6.50 an hour working a saute station at the Starfish Grill in Folly Beach. And I was essentially wrecking my credit learning how to cook. You know, I was living off credit cards, and I was too irresponsible to pay bills. But I had a passion for food, you know, and I was trying to learn something. But I didn't want to go to culinary school. So I would work two jobs, and then I would come home. And because I was such an avid reader, I could literally read a cookbook from cover to cover in a night, as long as I wasn't too drunk to do it. But and I read all the food, all the magazines, you know, like this. Back in the early 90s, the food publications were actually written for us, the food industry. Mm-hmm. They weren't filled with ads and pretty girls, you know, making, you know, makeup parties in their house. They were geared towards industry professionals. So you could real there was a lot of substance to learn. I mean, I essentially learned how to cook by going to work, trying to remember some of the things I had done, and then I would like be reading literally an issue of Cook's Illustrated on the toilet, and all of a sudden I'd be like, "Holy, we did that at work today!" Like that's why that worked, you know, like how to truss a chicken, or you know, like how to make hollandaise properly.
So you're self-taught.
I hate saying that word. I am not self-taught. I was lucky enough. Here's the thing.
I don't mean it that way. It's not diminishing your competence.
Well, I think that's arrogant when someone says I'm self-taught.
Okay.
Because there's no way you can, you know, you have to learn for better or for worse from the people around you.
True.
And, you know, everyone's like, have you been to Europe? Did you, like, you know, I'm from New York, but I never really worked in any good restaurants in New York. I've never stodged in Europe. I didn't go work for Thomas Keller in Napa Valley. You know, like, I watch chefs blow cocaine off shoe pants walking cooler. You know, like, I learned everything you're not supposed to do.
Right.
You
know? But that's the real restaurant experience.
And along the way, I learned how to cook.
Yeah.
But you know what really drove my cooking was my passion for food. And what I'm very grateful for is because I did not go to culinary school, I never subscribed to any preconceived notions of what wouldn't work well together.
Mm-hmm.
It's food. You know, if it doesn't taste good, we'll just throw it away and start over.
Right.
You know, simple as that. So, you know, I was never afraid to push some creative boundaries. But at the same time, I was never really enamored with this really over-the-top, fine dining, haute cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to do very approachable cooking, you know, which is why what we did at Rosebud was so natural for me. You know, we did fried chicken and, you know, we did local trout and, you know, but we were able to incorporate some different nuances that you wouldn't do at home, you know, mm-hmm. which is why it was a restaurant.
Trout that you catch yourself. And that your grandpa cooks in a frying pan while you stare at it while he's cooking it. It's the best trout in the world.
Absolutely.
And I just bring that up. I was looking at Facebook today, and I'm from Pennsylvania. Jeff and I are both from central PA.
What part?
A town called Mansfield.
Okay.
And there's a lot of fishing there, a lot of native brook trout, and then they stock and everything. But every year we would all go fishing, and I was a terrible fisherman. I would catch chubs or minnows, and I'd just throw. But my uncle and my grandpa and my cousin just yank, like the kid in that old Tex Avery cartoon, just, hey, Mac, where'd the kid go? You know, they're pulling all the fish out.
Yeah.
And I saw on Facebook today is the first day of the season, and they each caught their limit. So I know that I'm going to be getting either a shipment or I'm going to drive up there and get some fish. But what's the best way, would you say, to cook wild trout? Because what we always did is just flour, butter into the pan.
Yeah, and that's a good way. I mean, are you going to have to fillet the trout yourself?
No, they'll be filleted already.
Oh, even better.
You're
so,
right.
Yeah, I think a very quick saute. I mean, you're an avid cook now. I mean, do you have a big green egg at home by chance?
No.
Because smoking trout is always delicious. But mm-hmm. yeah, when I like making trout, I like searing it in a pan, and I like building a sauce in the pan while the fish
mm-hmm.
cooks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like at Rosebud, it was a very popular dish. We never changed it, actually. And I know you love bacon. We actually mm-hmm. used to do a little bit of cut up slab bacon. It was Alan Benton's bacon out of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so smoky. When they used to deliver it to us, the UPS driver smelled like smoke. I'm not kidding. I mean, that's how smoky this product is. So we would dice up the bacon, and we would pan roast the fish with bacon, cider vinegar, shallot, Brussels mm. sprouts, and a little bit of chicken stock. And then we would let that reduce, and we would finish it with a little bit of cold butter. And
yum.
So all the sauce would come together. Mm. It was a very tasty preparation.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
Can you come over and make that for me?
I can. Absolutely. Yeah. I know. I feel bad I didn't bring you food. That's the first time I've seen you. I've never brought you food. So
well, that's all
I'll
right.
have to make it up to you at the festival. I'll gladly come to your house and cook for you and your wife.
I had bad news. You know, so. I thought... Where is Nancy? Where is Southern Bistro now?
It is on Roswell Road. Same location. She just rebranded. She's in the Fountain Oak Shopping Center.
Yeah, okay.
It's right across the street from Food 101. So it was kind of fun to go back there for a while because it was like back where it all began. I really kind of cut my teeth in Atlanta food in Sandy Springs
mm-hmm.
when Food 101 first opened, and that was just
was the first fancy, you know, decent, cool place to go eat in Sandy Springs.
Yeah, it was. And it was post 9/11, so everybody was all about kind of getting back to their traditional food roots. And this whole idea
right.
of elevated comfort food. And yeah, it was a lot of fun to work in. And I would have never done what I did in the restaurant industry without that experience. I worked for incredible people, and it was a party, but it was also a great learning experience. And, you know, I was just talking to Scott Crawford. He was the chef I worked for. He's up in New York now. He works for, I can't remember the name of the company. It's a food company, but he sells food now. You know, and we were talking. I was like, man, I can't believe that was 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, where do the years go
by? It goes by fast.
Yeah, but we were doing some pretty, I don't want to say cutting edge stuff, but we were definitely cutting edge when it came to supporting local stuff.
Wasn't Fishmonger right next door?
Yeah, Fishmonger was behind us. Have you been over there recently? Fishmonger now is a little French place called Café Vendôme. It's a, they have the best French baguettes in the city.
Oh, even better than Kroger?
even better than Kroger.
There used to be that old man in that Kroger, and he's like, oh, my Dunwoody dolls and my Sandy Springs sweethearts come and get you.
In the Mountain Oaks one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You remember that guy?
I do remember that guy. But no, this bread is unreal. And they basically just do some sandwiches and desserts. It's a really cool place.
And what's in Food 101 still there?
Food 101 is still there.
All right.
Yeah. Sandy Springs has a lot of good little restaurants.
They do.
Rumi's Kitchen. I love Rumi's.
I love Rumi's.
Are you there like one day a week or do you just kind of go?
I'm there actually Wednesday night. I'm doing a wine dinner with them.
Right.
And then that'll probably be it for a little bit. I just got to get some of this other stuff launched. And, you know, I'm doing an event. We're doing an event called Smoke a Peach with Jordan Wakefield at Smoke Ring, which is a 101 Concepts restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
It's their barbecue place that's over in Castleberry Hill. So
ooh.
Every year I used to do an Eat a Peach dinner at Rosebud.
Yeah, come on.
So it's kind of like that, except it's going to be real focused on smoked meats. We're working with a company called Hunter Cattle out of Statesboro, Georgia. And we're going to be working with some of their meats. So
I love smoked meat.
Who doesn't?
I mean,
especially here in the South.
There's a place on I don't even remember the name of it. DBA Barbecue.
Yeah, DBA. Yeah.
Yeah,
they're actually going to be at Mother Clucker. Scott Switzer is their chef.
Oh, that's
and they
that
do
smoked.
They do a fried smoked chicken.
Yeah, they smoke it first and then they fry it. I had it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. DBA has been there a while.
That's like by Chastain Park, right?
No,
on Roswell Road, isn't it?
Well, unless there's one over there.
No, DBA is on North Highland Avenue.
Yeah, okay.
It's in Morningside.
I'm thinking of the one.
You're thinking of the Jackrabbit Grill or whatever.
Good barbecue place over there. I can't remember the name of it.
In Chastain or up in Sandy Springs?
Like off Roswell Road. It's on Roswell Road, but like near Chastain.
Oh, wait. Is it Pig and Chick?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's in the same shopping center as Southern Bistro.
Pig and
Chick
is good.
That's good stuff.
There used to be Ribs, Etc. on Roswell Road. We used to go there quite a bit. They had really good Brunswick stew, but I don't know what it is now.
Yeah, I don't know what
everything's different. But we lived there for almost 10 years, maybe about 5 years. And everything's different now. It's a city now. I mean,
it is. Literally.
Well, yeah. The American Pie is gone. Good. What was it called? Good old days.
Why is that American Pie space has been empty? I mean, did they find like dead bodies under that space?
I think
that
so.
That space has been empty because that's prime location on Roswell Road.
Right.
I mean,
right
it's
off
been empty
the freeway.
For like 4 years.
They found skeletons of women who had so much hairspray in their hair. Their hair never disintegrated, and they're wearing the white top. We used to love American Pub.
That was the place to go on Sunday.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Football every week.
And that pizza place that was across the street, then they closed that, and it was really good.
Well, they moved.
Love that place.
They didn't really close down. They relocated. I can't remember where they reopened, but they did.
I will cut the with some scissors any day.
Ruth's Chris is gone.
Yeah, it's a chiropractor now.
Yeah.
It's not even a restaurant.
No, I never really liked Ruth's Chris.
I've never been to a Ruth's Chris.
I'm not slagging them or anything, but I never really liked I got a filet there one time, and I was like, this is just butter.
Yeah. Rathbun's is better.
Well, yeah, I'm a Rathbun's steak.
Definitely better.
Yeah, where do you like to go eat when you go?
Well,
every
time I go on the radio, everyone always asks.
And I want to know your best burger, too, because I'm a burger fan.
All right, well, I'll get the burger thing out of the way right away. Okay. Best burger in the city is Grindhouse.
Really?
Yeah.
Grindhouse is, what's your favorite burger at Grindhouse?
Grindhouse style.
Okay.
Very simple.
Littles?
I get the single patty. No, I've never had Littles.
Okay.
I can't do the big burger thing. Like, these people who eat burgers are as big as their head. I mean,
well, you can't pick it up. Why?
No, you can't. It's all falling apart by the time you eat it. I mean, I could eat the single patty. I could eat those like Skittles. You know,
I love the Grindhouse, but have you had the meat stick at One Eared Stag?
I have not, but I love the name because I know Robert is a huge fish head. So I know that's...
You got to have the meat stick. And have you had the burger at Muss and Turner's?
I have, and that's a very good burger.
That's a kick-ass burger.
Yeah, that's a very good burger. Okay. I just went to Muss and Turner's new location up in East Cobb. It's
great. Okay.
Yeah, it's nice to have more... I live up in the burbs, so it's great to have better food. But yeah, back to your question. Everyone has this crazy notion that chefs eat out every night and like they stop at Bacchanalia at 10 o'clock at night. I used to smoke like 3 joints from Rosebud the Bacchanalia and sit down at 11 o'clock at night and eat a 5-7 course. you know where my best dinners were after work, after a 14 to 16 hour work day?
Popeyes.
No, Burger King.
Yeah.
Whopper Jr. And the best part about Burger King, when you order extra mayo, it comes on the ticket heavy mayo.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to open up a deli called Heavy Mayo. That's a great name.
I'll be there every day.
That's a great name.
I love mayo. I'll drink mayo.
But yeah, so I would sit in the parking lot at Burger King, and I would relish in the fact that I would not hear someone calling my name in English or Spanish for at least 20 minutes.
Misa Ron.
What'd you say, Jeff?
Did you say just spoonfuls of mayonnaise?
No, I did.
I love mayonnaise.
Yes, I did.
But, no, there are so many great restaurants in this city. I should get out more. I'm so into this. I feel like, again, the restaurant scene is also transitioning to where people are digging, the more upscale, fast casual eateries. I think
like a Krog?
Yeah, like the whole idea of the kind of food court.
Yeah.
I think that's going to make a return. And honestly, that's what I wanted to do with Diner before I got kicked out of there because I didn't have any money left. But I wanted to transform that bar area into a food court.
Was it hard to do things over there or to work in that environment? Because it's like a fake city.
It is. You know, honestly, yes and no.
Talking about Atlantic Station.
There were parts of it that were great, honestly. Right. They were very enthused about what we wanted to do. They changed ownerships like mid-drift for me, so it was a little weird. There are things that they make very easy for you, and then there are little simple things like, parking your car that could not be more difficult.
Uh-huh.
So there are different elements. I don't know if Atlantic Station will ever,
I'm not a fan of going there other than to see the movies because it's a great movie theater.
It is a great movie
theater. And you validate your parking.
Yes, and they validate your parking. But they're so strict about everything. Guys, you're outdoors and, you get let out of the movie. I'm a smoker, cigarettes.
You're not allowed to smoke there.
No, nowhere.
Yeah.
And then they'll come over and yell at you.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, they're piping out this garbage music for the, it's like the movie theater.
You're standing
music.
Outside.
Yeah, I know,
it seems like if you're standing outside, you should be able to smoke.
My wife's a reporter for Fox 5, and if there's a crime there, they're not allowed to go there and park anywhere because it's private property. It's not like it happened on Peachtree Street.
No, I didn't know that.
That's bizarre. They'll chase you off. You can't be here. So
let's face it, that place had a lot of reason to report news
there
for years.
Yes. not just the tennis tournament.
Yeah, exactly.
But
So what kind of stuff do you make for yourself at home?
Again, I'm a product of divorce, so I used to live in a nice house with a nice kitchen, and now I live in a 700-square-foot box. It does have a stove.
Yeah.
I, you know, I do a little bit of cooking at home. I'm starting to do more and more of it. I love cooking breakfast food. You know, I mean, again, when I had Rosebud, I mean, we did lunch, you know, brunch and dinner, and we did a great job at dinner, but we were really known. Like, I feel like we really kind of put Sunday Funday on the map,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it was just a party. But, you know, we put out really creative, good brunch food. So
one of our first dates was there.
Yeah.
And it was so yummy, you know. Thank you. And one of her favorite restaurants is Family Dog.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Is it still? Have you been?
We haven't been there since. A friend of ours was a bartender there. This was after you had left and it had reopened, I think. He was a bartender there and then he left and now he's working at the expensive Holman and Finch place.
Oh, yeah.
I call it expensive because I've never been there.
Oh, that's a good burger.
I'm sure it is.
But now I try to do more cooking. Something I want to do more of, and especially, you know, have them, like this morning, I cooked breakfast for my kids. They mm-hmm. at my house this morning. So, you know, I'll always gravitate towards cooking either breakfast foods. And again, because I'm so limited in my kitchen, I'll cook something I could put like all in one pot or one like baking dish and throw it in the oven.
I only have one pot, so that's.
I'm going to email you some recipes.
What do you cook at home, Jeff?
I made spaghetti for Easter dinner.
What?
Spaghetti?
Did you have ham in it at least?
I had hamburger and pepperoni.
Did you cook that Ooh. Stuff yourself?
I browned the hamburger.
Nice.
With the pepperoni.
Okay, that's more than I've cooked in a while.
I love people down here, I love how they call ground, like, it's called ground beef.
Right.
Everyone always calls it hamburger.
Yeah, hamburger.
Hamburger's on a bun.
Right. That's they like do the call very it that, different.
They do. They always like, take the hamburger and brown it.
We had, in that middle area of Pennsylvania, North PA, that were
borders. Scrapple.
Borders. No, that's south.
Okay.
South of us. But you,
we had it there. We just
you nobody ate it. We made it at the Bob. Yeah. I used to work at Bob Evans. And,
did you really? Yeah,
and I was a manager. And we had scrapple and mush. Have you ever had corn mush?
I've never had corn mush. I really do like scrapple.
Well, that's not bad.
I love scrapple.
But the thing that for some reason we had in our town, where the town over in New York State was called Elmira, New York. It's still called Elmira.
Yeah, yeah.
But they had these hots. There was M&M hots and Midtown hots. And it was these hot dogs with the most delicious meat sauce. And the meat was diced up so fine it looked like confetti. I mean, no, not that. It looked like sugar.
Yeah.
And it had that really.
What else is Elmira known for? Isn't that?
Mark Twain's buried there.
That's not what I was thinking.
Hal Roach is from there. You mean food wise?
There's something else. Music? Do they have like a big.
No. There's two prisons there.
That's
Hill,
what it is.
Tommy Hilfiger's from there. Ernie Davis is from there. No. Yeah. He's buried.
I think the prison's probably the most famous thing.
No. Mark Twain's buried there.
Oh, yeah.
And you can go to his grave and people leave cigars there.
Do they really?
Yeah, and everything is called Clemens this, Clemens that, the Mark Twain Center, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Because he married a rich woman from Buffalo, and they lived there, and that's where he died.
Huh, I never knew that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really all Elmira's known for. I mean, hot cuisine, I don't think so. They got an Applebee's. Boy, that was nice.
Now you know you're on the map.
See, I worked as a manager at Fuddruckers. That's how I got to Atlanta.
Yeah.
And
I used to go to the Fuddruckers in Charleston.
Yeah, I got sick of it, but I loved those burgers for a while, especially since I had to learn how to do the meat.
Did you grind your own meat there?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, we'd get this big slab of meat, and then some Spanish-speaking guy would come in, and if he'd call me sometime and go, "Team, no ride today, man." I'm like, I'm calling a cab. I am not butchering that meat all day. So. You know, he worked there, and he was also a butcher at Publix. So, I mean, the guy was
so he knew what he was doing.
Yeah. I didn't know what I was doing.
Speaking of Publix, I got some fried chicken drumettes from there the other night.
They do get fried chicken.
They do normally. The other night, it still had the feathers on three of my drumettes.
Oh, that's good, though.
Which Publix?
Snellville.
Okay.
Yeah.
The feathers were free. It was a special.
Yeah.
I was thinking my granny would never have let that happen. I mean, our house smelt like an Eli Roth movie, but there was not a puckered skin on that chicken. She made sure it was all singed off.
So, so this isn't radio, but we're going to reset anyway. It is the Mother Clucker Fried Chicken Festival. It's the third annual. Is this the third annual in Atlanta?
Yes, it is.
And it is Sunday, April 30th from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Stave Room at American Spirit Works, 199 Armor Drive Northeast, Atlanta. Now,
what part of town is that?
Yeah, is that the Old Fourth Ward?
No. It's I guess it's kind of considered Midtown towards the west side.
Okay.
You know where Sweetwater is now?
Yes.
It's right near there.
All right.
Yeah, it's right near there.
American Spirit Works. That's another thing that's happening in Atlanta. A lot of distilleries.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, American Spirit Whiskey is, they really kind of blazed the trail for it here in Atlanta. In fact, Family Dog, when it first opened back in 2010, we were one of the first bars to actually carry their product. So I know those guys, Jim and Charlie, really well, and great guys. And what they've done, have you been to the distillery?
No.
It's awesome. And they do tastings. Mm. It's open to the public. It's really cool.
The tickets are only $40.
That's right. And it's, you know, basically all you can eat and drink. So.
Right.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and it is crazy.
Let's see. Hang on. I'm going to
test that policy.
Tickets are available at culinarylocal.com. That is culinarylocal.com. Go ahead and get your tickets now.
We'll post a link to it when we put the show up.
It'll be all over our social media, and it'll be in the description of the podcast. So one thing I was going to ask you about Grateful Dead. One thing about the Grateful Dead is, again, it's like restaurant. It's a social situation. It's not just we're going to go see this band.
It's an experience.
Yeah. And then there's the Shakedown Street area, and that still exists when you go see Dead and Company,
or
whatever incarnation
they have. Or go see Panic, Fish, Cheese.
It's called Shakedown. So what is the best kind of food to eat when you're at a Dead show or a show of that ilk? What's your favorite first, and what do you think if you're going to do it, you got to do it right?
Yeah, I mean, I got to admit, I don't know how many times I've actually eaten on Shakedown Street.
Someone's eating on Shakedown Street.
You know, you got the cliche. You got the cliche grilled cheese.
Grilled cheese, man.
You got to be a little bit careful about what you ingest in that lot.
Right.
You never know what you might. There might be a bonus ingredient in there.
But there are guys now. I recognize their setups. I've seen them in New York State at SPAC. I've seen them in Pennsylvania. I've seen them here. They just set up their little. They got Meat Wad from Adult Swim.
Yeah.
From Aqua Teen is their logo, which is theft. But anyway.
Well, you know, it's so funny because, like, if you think about, like, in terms of food and the elements of food, again, that's another thing that the Grateful Dead are going to get a little bit of credit for, the whole idea of the food trucks, this entrepreneurial capitalistic spirit in the lot of, you know, being able to fulfill people's needs. I mean, let's face it. When you go to a show, whenever I go to a show, and I don't party anymore.
Right.
But I used to party like it was my job.
Right.
And when I came out of a show, what I looked for was the kid who was selling the dollar bottled water.
Right. Yes.
And that ice cold bottled water was the best thing I've ever ingested in my life.
I love that guy right after the show.
Don't you? Like, you come out and you stand next to him and you, I mean,
suck. Give me another one.
Yeah, you suck the entire bottle down. Like, when you're in the show, you know you got to save just a little bit of cash for that bottled water.
I realized my party limit died at Magna Ball in Watkins Glen, New York, 2015, a three-day fish festival.
Yeah.
The day of the third show, I had so much to drink that day, I fell asleep in the middle, and my friend kept taking video of me. Hey, man, wake up.
You know, it's so funny you bring up fish. Going back to when I was first getting involved in the restaurant business, I was working at a restaurant on Long Island, and that's when Fish had Clifford Ball. Remember the original?
Like, yeah.
It was up at Plattsburgh, which Plattsburgh is, I mean, it's faster to drive from Long Island to Atlanta than it is to drive to Plattsburgh. And I remember being such a geek at work, and a bunch of my friends were going, and I had a ticket, and I was like, nah, I'm going to stay and pick up a couple extra shifts. And, you know, they go up to Plattsburgh, and it's like all over the news. Like, Fish heads have shut down a New York Thruway, like, you know, and now I sit on my couch and I watch the DVD of it.
Right.
Like, I cannot believe.
I got into them late. I was always like, nothing will ever be better than the Dead. And, you know.
And nothing is.
No, that's true.
But there's offshoots.
Right, right. And it's different. I mean, it's the same but different.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, honestly, Panic was where I really got hooked. Panic and Allman Brothers is where I really kind of got, like, into the music scene, but then it made me gravitate back towards the Dead, because when I first got introduced to the Dead, I did not have the mental capacity to take it all in.
Right.
You know, so there's no way I was.
I feel that because I have the same experience, but go ahead.
Yeah, so then when I went back, the Dead have obviously, they have more substance, and I don't say this in a derogatory way, they just have more substance than Panic and Fish, and maybe even Allman Brothers put together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I mean, if you came to my apartment, you would think I were a Grateful Dead historian.
Yeah.
You know, like, they just have books and books. I mean, and and they're also, you know, the first book I ever read about the Dead that really got me hooked was called Dark Star, and it was actually a book of interviews about Jerry by other people, and it was just so fascinating, you know, to learn about how he was as an artist and, you know, just kind of understanding the human element of him, and then understanding that and then kind of bringing it back to the music. And, you know, just like, I remember being confused when I remember, like, I really loved the version of Red Rooster on the Dead CD. I can't believe I can't remember
what
the name
is it,
of it.
Dead Set?
Dead Set.
Yeah.
And Deal is like track 4 or 5, and it's got an incredible Candyman on it. And I remember listening to another version of Red Rooster, and I was like, wait a second, this doesn't sound anything like,
right.
You know, like,
right.
And that's when I came to understand that, you know, it sounded different every time they performed it.
Right.
You know, like, and I really tried to bring that ethos to food, but obviously when you go to a restaurant, what do you want? You want consistency.
Right.
You know, so it was always a challenge, like, how can we make the food better every day without making it very different? You know, because it's a neighborhood restaurant. That's primarily what I've done. And so people, you know, but that's what I was able to achieve, is that they would come in almost expecting something different every time, much like, you know, going to a Dead show. You know? 'Cause, I mean, to me, the best part, like, I'm a geek of the music. Like, I love walking into the show trying to guess what
they're going
to
open with.
Yeah, yeah.
All that.
I took my son. He's 12 now. I took him to his first show. It was a Fish show when he was 7 years old at Verizon Amphitheater. And I walked in there, and, of course, you know, I looked like a hero. I was, like, carrying my 7-year-old, and people were like, oh, my God, a kid bringing his kid. Like,
yeah, passing it on.
And at first, I was like, maybe we'll sit on. I had seats near, not up front, but I had reserved seats. But I was like, maybe we'll sit in the lawn, you know, to be a little bit tamer. But it really wasn't. At Verizon, that lawn is a little bit small. It's a little raucous. So we went to our seats, you know, and there were some guys, you know, smoking some weed. And I was like, hey, guys, if, you know, like, I don't want to cramp your style. Like, I'm a kid here. If we could just kind of – and they're like, oh, it's all good, Pops. You know, we got it. You know, like, and these little hippie chicks were coming over and giving light sticks to my son. You know, he felt like a hero.
Throw him.
So and it was my first Fish show in probably, like, 5 years. And it was a great show. And Trey was newly sober. And he is on – I mean, incredible. Like, the level of clarity that's playing with it's incredible.
Are you going to see him next weekend?
I don't know yet.
420?
Yeah, maybe Sunday. We still haven't fully. I got some work I got to do, but we'll see. But I'm at this Fish show, and they're just smoking through the first set, and they come to, like, one of those lulls where they're doing a jam, and they go into, like, the first bass line, and I didn't do it on purpose, but I was like, Down with Disease, and they started playing it, and like, all the kids around me looked at me like I was like this muse.
You're a god.
Yeah, like, how did you know that?
Whoa. You know, like, bruh.
And I always love sitting next to a girl, like, you know, she's like, yeah, this is like my 8th show, and I'm like, yeah, this is like my 75th of just Fish.
Wow. When I used to work at 96 Rock, I was the marketing director there, and I had tickets to everything, tons and tons of tickets. And I miss those days because I have to pay for everything now. But we would get those tickets to, like, Phil and Friends or Further, those festivals from the early 2000s. And I would always take leftovers. And my favorite thing to do was walk through the crowd and the people that really looked like they needed one. Not, you know, like the, oh, I need 2 tickets. You know, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would find these people and I'd go, here. How much do you want for them? Nothing. Enjoy.
That's awesome.
And it was, but it was usually pretty girls.
Nothing wrong with that.
I don't really want anything yet.
You didn't, like, look for anybody handicapped like that.
Have you ever seen the Dead up in New York?
New York City, no.
So I saw post-Jerry Dead at the Garden. And I've been to a few shows. I've seen Fish at the Garden.
I've seen them there,
But it's amazing how the whole dead culture can travel and infiltrate anywhere. And I remember I spent, like, the whole day eating and drinking, and we're going to the show at the Garden, and I walk around the corner on 34th Street, and there's a guy holding up a sign, I need a miracle.
Yeah.
Like, have you been on ice for the past 25 years and someone just, like, where did you come from? Like,
they bring me out every summer.
What I want to know is, how did you get to New York City?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I hitchhiked.
Like, how did you get to New York City? But that's what, like, I'm always in awe that the element and the culture of these shows is so timeless. You know, and hopefully it's going to be, you know, I mean.
Well, I'm going to go to the Dead & Company, when is it, in June?
June.
And it's at Lakewood, which I prefer to Verizon.
See, I'm not a big Lakewood fan.
Oh, I like it because it's dirty and no one bothers you there. There's too many. It's too clean and security filled up the other
I know.
Way.
Yeah. That it is. But I was, you know, when I go to Lakewood, I'm like, all right, which person's lawn did I park my car on? Uh-huh. And I don't drink.
Right.
Now I'll have a better time remembering where I parked.
Well, Lakewood, you can piss anywhere. Nobody's
That's, yeah. You can't. Well, I'm actually, you know, we do, at Family Dog, we used to do a Jerry Day every year with a gentleman named Lewis Newmark, and he has a dead tribute band called Grateful Dude. Mm-hmm. And they're really good. And he kind of really is almost a curator of this whole dead scene in Atlanta. And we do it every year in August. And I can't remember the date, but I'll let you know.
Oh, I want to go.
Gonna want, yeah.
Hell
we're,
yeah.
We're doing it at Terminal West this year.
Oh.
Which is a great venue
yeah,
for
definitely.
It. And I'm kind of curating the food portion of it.
That's right over by my apartment.
Have you guys been there?
No, I haven't been. I drive
to Terminal West.
It's awesome.
No.
I saw Bob Mould there a few months ago, and I'd never seen a show there, and the venue is amazing.
What are you talking about? Yeah. Cool
it really it is
was.
Amazing.
Great sound.
Yeah, it really is such a cool venue. So we're going to do some fun stuff with food there, but you know, I told Lewis as we're putting this one together, I'm like, you know, what I think the great part about Dead & Company right now, especially having John Mayer involved, is John Mayer is basically creating a whole new, like, client base
yep.
of Deadheads.
Yep.
Right.
You know, like, people who don't even know that he's, I don't want to say replace Jerry Garcia because no one ever could, but, mm-hmm. you know, like, there are so many people who are just, they just like John Mayer.
He's such
know?
A phenomenal guitar player.
Oh, he's an unbelievable guitar player.
I have a theory that they were going to do those anniversary shows when they were done, and Mayer injected new life into it. I could be wrong because I don't know.
Yeah,
but maybe Bob said, "Hey guys, let's keep it going." You know,
I don't know. I was a little put off with that at first because of all this whole like Chicago was like this
that's
whole
it.
Climactic ending, and,
yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden, like I mean, let's face it. I mean, talk about pulling the rug from your feet. They like announced the shows like a week after Fare Thee Well. Like,
right, right.
I mean, like the tour buses were still warm. You know, like which I thought was kind of nuts, but at the same time, I mean, I love the music, so more opportunity to see the music. And again, you talk about technology. I mean, I love going. There's nothing like being at a show. But I remember watched the Santa Clara show on my Mac with like a cup of green tea.
Right.
And I'm like, wow.
I love the modern
I've come a long way.
Yeah, you have. You didn't have to get a bootleg VHS and watch it with your buddies.
Well, for somebody like myself, who's never really been into the Grateful Dead, what would be the one album that would like maybe Oof. That you would think would get somebody into them?
Oh God! I mean, if you
Built to Last,
really?
No,
yeah.
That's what got a lot of people into the Dead.
I know like, that was their
I
last
know,
album.
I know Touch of Grey.
Yeah. And that's not a bad thing, you know. Although I got to be honest with you, like I've never been a big fan of Touch
no, wait,
of Grey.
What's the one after Built to Last? There's their very last studio album came out in 1989.
Far from Me.
Is that what it was called?
Or was that before Built to Last?
Built to Last is the one with the hits on it, correct? God, I'm a terrible dead.
Built to Last is the one with Touch of Gray and Hell in the Bucket.
Yeah, right? Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, come on. If you're really a deadhead, I mean, the studio stuff is not, you know. It's the fact that you can name a date and we can recite half the first set sitting here. But you know what I would do? Honestly, like, I would go to YouTube and I would, like, just type in live Grateful Dead.
And just watch shows.
Just watch it. Yeah, just watch some. You know, because honestly, like, it's hard to truly appreciate it from a TV screen. But if you could kind of capture some of that energy, you know, to me, that's what it was all about for me. I mean, it wasn't so much the content of the songs. It was, you know.
Right.
It was, I mean, honestly, but to this day, my favorite show, and I saw it on VHS,
mm-hmm.
was Downhill from Here at Alpine Valley, 1989.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Are you serious?
No.
It's incredible. And I remember I was living in Augusta at the time with an old Citadel buddy of mine, and he bought it for me for Christmas, and he came home with it, and he was so excited. He woke me up, and we opened it up and watched it that night, and we sat on two. And it's got a – it closes the first set with Deal that will just blow your mind. I mean –
What did we do one night? We all got the New Year's Eve show from San Francisco on demand and watched it on New Year's Eve.
The closing of?
Years. No, this was years and years ago, and they were still touring. It was the late 80s, or maybe 90, I don't remember. But we got the New Year's Eve. It wasn't pay-per-view then. It was, what was it called? It was, you had to get the little device and put it on your TV, whatever. Yeah, it was pay-per-view.
It was pay-per-view, yeah.
I'm not very good at remembering things. So, Steph, this is the first song the Grateful Dead played at Orchard Park in 1989. It's Bertha.
Yep.
And skip ahead a little bit. Bertha is Jeff's favorite Dead song.
You know, but, you know.
No, Cassidy. Sorry.
That's my daughter's name.
Yep.
And my son's name is Midland.
after Brent.
Yep.
Yeah. Remember
tell me,
this, Jeff?
Tell me he's not going to get laid.
That's
in
a cool.
College.
That's a cool name. Like,
I'm named after the keyboard player in the Grateful Dead. Hopefully, John Mayer can keep that memory alive until he gets to college. Your he's body, only 12 now.
Your body is wonderful. I'm going to turn it down, but that's a good show. I would look that up, Steph.
Okay.
Ron, thank you very much for coming on our show.
Thank you. It's been a blast.
And you're welcome to come back anytime. And yes, anytime you have something that you'd like to promote or talk about,
yeah, absolutely.
Email me and we'll talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we'll stay in touch. I'm glad we got back on each other's radar. And,
me too, man. You know. I know I was like, hey, can you help me with a job? Yeah, sure. Come over. I'm too lazy. That was me, by the way.
Well, that was good because I think like we closed like a month later. So. I wouldn't have been able to come on your show right now had I been responsible for more unemployment.
Nah, you'd been fine. You best get clucking. It's the third annual Mother Clucker Fried Chicken Festival this Sunday, April. Next Sunday, April 30th. Well, let's just say Sunday, April 30th, because who knows when you're listening to this. 2 to 5 p.m. at the Stave Room at American Spirit Works. That is 199 Armor Drive. In Atlanta.
Give the website for getting tickets.
Well, hey, I'm a professional here. $40 tickets, cold beverages, hot chicken, live music. Price includes open bar and all-you-can-eat chicken after April 15th, which is now. Tickets are $45.
They're actually still 40.
Okay, they're still 40.
I went ahead and made that audible. I said, you know what, let's keep it at 40. It's the first year we're bringing it back. So
to get tickets, go to culinarylocal.com. Or have Ron on your podcast. Ron, we do a thing every week. The three of us pick our staff picks because we normally talk about TV and movies and pop culture, and we did that today, except it was food and music. So is there anything that you're watching that you would recommend to anybody?
Boss Baby. I haven't watched TV in years. Another product of divorce and whatever.
Yeah.
But I have two young kids, so I haven't seen an actual like adult movie in like 5 or 6 years now.
Wow.
But we took the kids to see Boss Baby. And
how was it?
It's hysterical. Alec Baldwin is, I mean, it's so funny.
Are there lines from Glengarry Glen Ross in that, like modified lines?
It sounds like stuff like put the
there's definitely adult humor.
Down.
Okay.
Yeah. Like all these kid movies.
They have to because you got to get those Gen Xers.
Yeah.
The millennials might not get it, but we do.
Yeah, you know, and another great movie was Sing.
Sing, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's hysterical.
I haven't seen that, but I was watching the Grammy tribute to the Bee Gees that was on over the weekend.
Last night, actually.
And somebody that was one of the singers in Sing sang a Bee Gees song, and it made me want to check out that movie because she was really good.
I actually got my kids, I was thinking about something, you know, I got them the DVD for Alf. Remember the series?
Yeah,
we love Alf.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, my kids, they don't have access to, like, Alf, the Flintstones, Thundercats, like, all these things that, like, I'm like, God, pieces of my childhood that are gone, you know, but that thank God for Amazon.
Yeah, no kidding. I love Elf. Jeff loves Elf.
Yeah.
We watched the whole first season last night. It's hilarious.
Don't tell your kids what happened to Willie.
What happened to him?
Oh, he ended up being a crack addict.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
Why? Yep.
Oh, he was in the National Enquirer with a crack pipe and his pants were down.
That's kind of messed up. So Jerry Stahl, the one who wrote it and was a heroin addict, got clean, and then Willie became a crack addict.
Yeah, I guess so. Alf was into benzos.
Who was Alf? That's like
I don't know who did the voice. Do you know?
Yeah, no, he was a guy.
It's not even in the credits, is it?
He died.
I think. No, he's still alive.
I thought he died.
Because he was on Mr. Robot.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh.
Oof.
I don't do a good Elf.
The guy that was inside the costume died. The little person.
Yeah, he died.
Was into, but the guy that did the voice of Alf and created Alf, was a guy, Paul Fusco. He's still alive.
Okay.
Yeah, dude, I miss the voices in the morning. On my ride into work, I used to be crying some mornings.
Well, you can hear some of them on
I got to tune in from
11 to 12 on the Von Hessler Doctrine, then 12 to 1 on. We have a lot of. I have a whole new set of characters.
One of my favorites to do right now is Caitlyn Jenner. You know, I'm thinking
that
about.
That was the highlight of the Live Shack podcast.
I want to know what question you asked.
Last week, Jeff and I went to the taping of the Live Shack. What's it called again?
The big podcast with Shaq.
With Shaquille O'Neal. Because our good buddy Rob.
Oh, yeah, so you had a picture with him.
Yeah, Rob,
yeah.
Our good friend Rob Jenners is the producer, and it's John Kincaid from 680, and Shaq is the star. And it was weird because we'll get into this real quick, and then we got to wrap. But Jeff and I are waiting in the parking lot. Shaq pulls up in his convertible, And the people kind of like go up to him, and he's the nicest guy. And I go, "Hey, Shaq, can we get your picture?" He's like, "Yeah." But he was smiling. He was nice and everything. But anyway, they had a question and answers. You could write them on a sheet of paper and then hand them to the assistant. And they read my name. And, you know, Rob went, "Oh, Tim, we know Tim." Da, 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 da.
Not only that, but Craig Gass knew you.
He had a comedian there. And I don't know how I ended up doing Caitlyn Jenner, though. I had a question for him about Charles Barkley. How did I end up doing?
Somebody asked him to do Caitlyn Jenner.
And he couldn't do it.
He couldn't do it. Yeah,
I went, I do a Caitlyn Jenner, and you know, last week I had my javelin turned into a catcher's mitt. And by the way, is that podcast out now?
I don't know. I got to look.
He used to do Barkley all the time.
Yeah. That's terrible. Yeah, I need to go to that Exxon on the corner of Piedmont Monroe and give me some lottery tickets. I've seen him there buying lottery tickets.
Dude, he used to come into Rosebud every now and
then. Did he really?
I got hammered with Barkley one
night. Oh, that must have been
awesome.
And
we ended up going to the Warren. And I mean, I'll keep this real short. And I almost got into a fight, which is very, un-Ron. That's not me. And Charles Barkley could not be a nicer guy, but he always speaks in third person. We're at the Warren, and I walk up the stairs, and at the time, Jimmy's working the door, and he goes, "Ron, you here with Charles Barkley?" And I was like, yeah. And we're sitting at the bar, and I shoved somebody, and he got us out of there because I guess he didn't want to end up on, like, TMZ. And,
right.
And he was like, "You can't be getting in no fight when you out with Charles Barkley." and we got back. We were driving this old-school Mercedes,
yeah.
and we went back to Rosebud. And I had him pounding mind erasers. And he was like, "I can't do any more of them coffee shots. Give me a vodka cranberry."
And then he drove to a hooker.
No comment.
Oh, so I'll say mine real quick. Oh, you probably got so many stories. I want you to come back.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll do story time. My quick real pick here is Booze Traveler Best Bars. It's season 3 of Booze Traveler. You can check that out 10 p.m. Monday night on the Travel Channel. Do you watch any of those Travel Channel shows, any of those food shows on TV?
Not really.
I like Zimmern. I like him a lot.
He's got a new show, too. Best Destinations or something?
I just like it when he goes to the one he did in America when he was in Pennsylvania and he's eating turtle balls. And
I think it's called Delicious Destinations.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I thought maybe you would pick that because you like that guy.
And we've interviewed him. Well, we interviewed him on The Regular Guys and he was nice. So if you're nice, I like you.
You don't watch any? Do you watch any cooking shows?
No. No.
No. My wife watched the one with the kids the other day, and I felt bad for all the kids, so I can't watch it again.
I got, because I was on Top Chef, I get some of these emails from the casting companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got an alert about casting, and I'm so, like, close to wanting to see if my son would want to do it, but he might still be a little young to do it. I don't know. But, no, I just don't, you know, like, I just got into the habit of not watching TV. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I'm out all the time. I work. And
that's a good thing.
I'd rather listen to music.
Aw.
You know, or podcasts, or you know what I miss about not having to. I don't really watch the news. I listen to the news.
Have you listened to that S Town podcast? Everybody's freaking out about.
I have not, but I've heard of it. I just started subscribing to what's it called, The Hustle.
I haven't heard.
Ooh,
of it.
I don't know that one.
It's actually pretty good. Now I read it. It comes to me every day at noon. I think they have a podcast that goes along with it though.
The Hustle.
I want to start my own podcast, so I got to get more into.
Do
this.
It. I'll help.
Right?
You
would
with
I
that.
Be good at it?
Yeah, I'll help you with it. You'd be great at it.
Yeah.
You have a good voice.
Mm-hmm.
You project well. And you know a lot of stuff.
You got a ton of stories.
Yeah,
I got a ton of stories.
I got stories.
You and I.
Now that I'm divorced, I could tell all of them.
Let's stay in touch. We have to do a better job of staying in touch, because if you want to do a podcast, I'll help you with
okay,
it.
Okay, absolutely. Done.
All right. Steph, what's your Steph pick?
Mine is, it's a new show. It comes this Tuesday on Comedy Central at 10 o'clock with Moshe. Is that how you pronounce
Moshe.
It?
Moshe.
Moshe. Moshe Kasher,
yeah.
The comedian. It's called Problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically, he's kind of doing like a 1980s style daytime talk show, but at nighttime, like a Phil Donahue type thing, where he takes on one hard internet topic a week, whether it be impeachment or the dark web or
he
whatever.
He is a weird dude.
He is weird.
I thought he was gay until I found out he was married to
Natasha Leggero. I know, right?
What does that mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It just means he's gay and married. I mean, you know.
Could be. Who knows?
He's just, we had him on the show once, and oh no, I'm thinking of somebody else. Moshe Kasher is not the guy I'm thinking of. So
no, he's really
not weird.
Funny. He's funny. On it at midnight.
Yeah,
all the
I know
time.
Who he is. He's the guy with the glasses and
yeah,
he's
a goofball.
I was thinking of somebody else.
But, so basically in 30 minutes' time, he solves the world's problems, basically. And they hash it out. He has other comedians on the show, and he takes people from the audience and whatnot, and everybody just kind of sorts it out, and it's like a real talk show type situation. But yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
Jeff,
mine's Fargo season 3 starts the 19th. If you're listening to this podcast, it's probably tonight or tomorrow.
Yeah,
that's my most anticipated show of the year.
So looking forward to it.
Other
first
than Game
two
of Thrones,
seasons were so good.
All right,
you know what's funny? You know, like when you talk about like all these like addictions with like TV, isn't it crazy how now you could watch an entire TV series in a night? Like,
yeah,
oh, yeah. Not,
you know, like again, like
if you want to,
oh,
yeah.
I will.
But you know, like when, again, when we were younger, like we could only watch like one episode of The Cosby Show,
and you had to wait.
You had to wait a week.
That's why I have a hard time getting into that binging on TV shows.
No, I watched an entire season of Narcos in a night.
Oh, yeah. That's a good ass show.
Oh,
that's
a really
so
good
hard
show.
Not to
and what's the one with Kevin Spacey?
House of Cards.
House of Cards. Yeah, yeah. Like, but
those shows are built for that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But like I remember when I was young, like Friends. Like I waited so long to watch mm-hmm. Rachel and Ross kiss. Right.
Yep.
You know, like that, I remember where I was. I was at the Citadel. Like they had like a mini riot when they kissed. Like had to tell all the cadets to go back to the barracks.
I watched three episodes of Brockmire yesterday. What a great show that is!
I knew you'd love it. Oh my
Shot
god!
Shot in Atlanta. I don't know where the hell they did that.
So
but.
Funny.
Are you a Chappelle fan?
Yes.
Yeah, I watched the new stuff that he's got on Netflix.
So funny, weren't
yeah,
they?
It's
People of Detroit.
Yeah. He's hysterical.
We live in blessed times, but we live in cursed times because with all the good on the internet, there's tenfold worse. But, you know, that's the way the world works.
That was
going
to be my other staff pick. The Lucas Brothers have their Netflix specials dropping
today.
This week, I think. Yeah.
I think it dropped today.
Those guys are funny.
So, again, Ron Eister, thank you very much for
thank
coming
you.
On
yeah,
the show.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, man, I've had a great time.
And again, y'all best get clucking. Go to culinarylocal.com, buy your tickets for the Mother Clucker Fried Chicken Festival, Sunday, April 30th, 2 to 5 p.m. at the Stave Room at American Spirit Works. All the information will be
And we'll be there.
Linked. Yes, we will. We'll definitely be
yeah,
there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Me and the wife and these two.
Yes, I will email you, get all the information.
Your husband's
the old,
not allowed to come, Steph.
What we call the comp list.
You know he...
The cobblist?
The comp list.
Oh, the comp
list. You know, you're so important, you don't even need to.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, nice.
Yes, I'm on Ron's list.
By the way, I'm Tim Andrews from WSB, also the Radio Labyrinth podcast. But this will be promoted everywhere.
Thanks.
So thanks again.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And until next week, which, by the way, hang on, we will be back to talk about The Leftovers. We will be back to talk about all sorts of TV shows we didn't get to today. Don't you worry. And maybe Tim will even see a movie between now and then.
Ooh.
Highly unlikely.
Next week we're going to try and interview Doug Stanhope.
Okay, so maybe we'll talk about TV in 2 weeks. But anyway.
But yeah, we're going to record a regular podcast also.
Okay.
At the punchline
mm-hmm.
after the show.
Yeah.
But we're going to try and get Doug Stanhope to be on the podcast just at least for a few minutes.
Okay, maybe he'll say hello.
Yeah.
And by that time, he'll probably be shit-faced, so it'll be funny. All right. Thank you again, Ron. And until next week, please remember to
keep it canon.
Hey, it's Tim here, and I want to say thank you to all of our Patreon patrons. You can find our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/Tim Andrews. Thanks to Zach Pittman, JB, Beth Van Elswick, Lou Caniglio, Mike Hall, David C. Funk, Wendy Muller, Matt Carter, Jonathan Wilson, Eric Malmstrom, Colin Oman, Matt Tenaglia, Amber Gilpatrick, Garrett Kemble, Keith Tate, Herb Lamb, Jose Perales, and our good buddy Trent. Listen, we can't do this show without you, so we want to thank you very, 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 very much for donating what you donate to us. It helps keep things going. So really appreciate it. Thank you. You guys are the true producers of the Radio Labyrinth podcast.
Two Faces Radio.